You're listening to episode 284 of Women Worldwide. Whether you're a writer, journalist, aspiring author, or you just love a good story, I've got a guest today who has a lot to share about storytelling, so stay tuned to learn more. Hi, I'm Deirdre Breckenridge. I've spent an entire career helping women to share stories, nurture relationships, grow their brands, but most of all, to find their voices so they can make a difference. Do you feel stuck? Do you want to power up your own voice? Women Worldwide features the stories of passionate women who have navigated big career challenges and some of the toughest changes. These professionals offer deep insights and advice to inspire you and to help you uncover what's holding you back. Let Women Worldwide ignite your passion so you can excel in life. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Women Worldwide. Thank you so much for tuning in and for always sharing the stories and the advice of the guests that come on the show. It's because of you that our network is growing. Well, I want to get right to today's topic because it happens to be one of my favorites. It is storytelling. And I'd like to attack storytelling from two angles. One being that we're in the age of COVID-19 and a global pandemic, we're staying home more often, right? So I'm not traveling or going over to the city for meetings, and I find myself ordering shoes and groceries online. And at this time, I'll ask you a question. Are you inspired to be a storyteller? Are you writing more? Or are you inspired to devour stories and to read more? Well, I'm a little bit of both. I have two book projects going on, and I'm also reading two books at a time. So this is the perfect segue to my guest today, because she is a storyteller. Joining me on the show is Michelle Weldon. And Michelle has spent 40 years, okay, as an award-winning journalist, and she's the author of six nonfiction books. Michelle is an author, a speaker, a trainer, an instructor, and her mission is to deliver, I love this, truthful and authentic stories that are accurate and masterful content. What a mission. Had me at hello. So I could go on and on about Michelle, but I think it's time that she joins the conversation. Michelle, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me today. I'm really excited about our talk.
Well, I'm excited too, because any opportunity to speak with a storyteller just makes me smile and inspires me. And that you are, I mentioned, you know, the 40 years, the journalism, the six nonfiction books. What puts you on the path to storytelling and to becoming an author, first of all?
I have a very corny story. I had my own newspaper when I was 10. It was called the Juvenile Journal. I had 50 subscribers. It was mandated in my large family of aunts and uncles and neighbors and cousins who paid 50 cents a year for this monthly that I typed up and copied on a hectograph machine in the family room. And my father mailed out. And I wrote about what was happening in our family, what was happening in the neighborhood. And I said to my father, I did it for 2 years from 10 to 12. And I said to my father, I'm doing so well. And he said, actually, you're not. You never paid me for postage. So I was a storyteller, but I was not such a great businesswoman. And then in high school, I wrote teen stories for the local newspaper and was paid $25 a story, which was, you know, huge amount of money. And you had to babysit for 100 hours to earn that kind of money. And I wrote them weekly. So I was, I made up for the Juvenile Journal in high school and then studied journalism in college and graduate school and went on to work on staffs on newspapers and magazines. So that I've always loved to write.
So it has been a writing journey. And I do want to say that between ages 10 and 12, I mean, just the fact that you were charging a subscription.
A paywall.
Right? You had a paywall even back then. Well, I'm glad you furthered your writing as you got older. And, you know, you do have a book that, and I love the cover, although the title is Act Like You're Having a Good Time. And it's so, the picture is of the little girl who doesn't look like she's having a good time. Tell us about this book.
Well, and everyone thinks the picture is me, and it's not, but it is a great picture of a young child. And the title comes from what my father would say to the six of us growing up. There's six of us in 7 years. And if we complained about not wanting to do a chore or not doing something that was expected, he just would look at us blankly and say, well, just act like you're having a good time. So it wasn't about being fake or superficial. It was really about looking for the positive and looking to try and enjoy something if you can. And usually ended up going that way, that you did end up having a good time. Not that we had a privileged and blessed life and we knew it, but we sometimes didn't act like we knew it. So this book is a collection of essays, which I'm really excited about. I divide it into three sections, talk about life, work, and meaning. So it, as an essayist for so many years, it is great to have my most recent collection put together. And I think it's a perfect time for this book.
Oh my gosh, definitely. So life, work, and meaning, and your essays. Who do you think would benefit the most from this type of book?
I think definitely women in my demographic, and I'm 62 years old. But I also understand one of the first readers of the book, or reviewers, was a millennial young man who said it connected to him as well, because it's about finding purpose in what you do and questioning your ambitions and your dreams and wondering if you are enough. And I also write about having multi-generational friends, and I'm the mother of three sons, 31, 29, and 26. So I constantly have that point of view in my life. And I think while it speaks directly, perhaps, to women who are older and facing invisibility and these kinds of issues, right, I also think there are more universal questions that I look at and most people can relate to.
When you write a book like this, is it difficult to dig deep, to sort of share the lessons of life and work and what meaning is, and or does it just flow? So how did you find yourself during the writing process?
So that's a great question, because I find it not just intellectually and creatively athletic, it's really emotionally athletic.
Right.
You do have to tap into that. And I have some experience with that. My first book was a memoir called I Closed My Eyes, and I wrote about my experience as a survivor of domestic violence. I was married to a man who was physically violent. And that was a journey, because I was so afraid of telling the truth while I was a journalist and telling other people's truths and also writing personal essays and writing around the problem. It wasn't until I felt brave enough and courageous enough to tell that truth that my life completely changed. And since then, not that you need permission to access that, but I have felt the benefits of diving so deep into a personal truth, and that it's really rewarding because it does connect to other people. And I have learned that lesson, that it's better to write from the heart than just superficially from your intellect.
Absolutely. So I do want to dive into a little bit about the truth and your mission to deliver, you know, what is true and accurate and authentic. But I kind of wanted to ask, you know, as a writer, a storyteller, because I'm sure women worldwide, all of you out there, you know, there's times when we want to write or we have to write. And Michelle, do you ever get stuck in your writing, or do you ever feel like I better take a pause? I guess it's writer's block. Does that ever happen? And what can you do?
Sure. Well, I don't really believe in succumbing to writer's block. First of all, I write for a living. So I write to pay the mortgage and to pay insurance. And I wrote to, you know, pay three college tuitions for my sons. But absolutely, sometimes I write better than at other times. So I give myself permission to just get it out of my body and get it onto the paper or onto the screen, knowing that I can fix it up and I can polish it and improve it. But I always feel like I don't want to blockade the flow of the truth. And absolutely, sometimes what I write is like, ooh, no. But like I said, you can always fix that up. It's just not letting it come out is the problem. And yes, there are times when something is too hot to touch that I need to think about more, but I will jot down things and phrases that come to mind. And I also feel that the best writing, while I do write on deadline every day, the best writing comes from writing in layers, because you're in different moods as you approach, you know, the laptop or the pad.
I like that, layers.
Yeah.
Explain that a little bit more.
Because if you wrote all in one mad rush, you know, which sometimes I have to do on deadline, it comes out in a particular tone from that moment, of what mood you're in, what you have access to, and how you're feeling and how you're writing. And even your word choice reflects your point of view that day.
Right.
So adding in different layers, I liken that to, I don't know if you remember and did as I did as a child, have, you know, paper dolls that you cut out outfits on, right? And so
yes.
You could put on a dress and pants and a hat and, you know, a backpack and an umbrella and all different
things. That was layered on.
Right. It's layered on. So give yourself the opportunity to be in different moods and approach it and be like, well, I didn't really mean that. This is better. And I also feel like your subconscious plays a role in improving and polishing your writing. Because, right. You know, I try to read great writers and sort of infuse myself with their brilliance, right? Like catching phrases and trying to deconstruct how they do that. And I feel that if you give yourself different opportunities of writing, that your work will become more layered and shinier.
Wow. Every time I think of layered now, I will think
of the cutout dolls.
Because I had a massive flashback to, you know, Barbie paper dolls and Cinderella paper dolls. It's amazing. Thank you for that. So let's touch on the truth. In whether it's journalism or writing, I'm sure it's being true to yourself. What would you tell others as far as navigating truth today with when they're reading a lot? You know, I touched on devouring content. Do you find yourself stepping back as a journalist and testing and making sure that it's accurate and truthful? How are journalists handling truth today?
Absolutely, because, you know, there is a crisis of credibility right now, and there is a lot of misinformation. So what I try to do is, as I gather information in the work that I do as a journalist, not just in my own story, is to make sure that, you know, the sites are reputable, that they, you know, are .org or .gov, or that they have you know, credence behind them, and that everything is evidence-based, and that it isn't just off the top of someone's head, that it isn't just an opinion. Even though I write opinion pieces, it's all based and fact and evidence that is, you know, statistical or studies or anecdotal. So I feel like you know your truth, but that is separate than the truth that is around us and the truth that we can gather. So I think at this time in our culture, it is on us to be prudent about deciphering sources and sourcing and deciding what is factual and what we can follow in our lives.
I agree. I mean, I'll take that from the public relations side of me, working with journalists, being a storyteller. When I think of fake news, I'm looking at news that doesn't name sources, right? There are no experts named. There are no studies or statistics. There are no links to credible sources. Nobody else is talking about the same news. Or if they are, it's more of the same without the sources and without the experts. So I agree with you. I think now more than ever, whether you're a journalist, you are a blogger, a storyteller, it's time to really dig in and to make sure you have that ethics hat on for That's truth right. and accuracy and objectivity right. as well.
Really, you know, really. I taught journalism at Northwestern for 18 years.
Oh my.
And, yeah, and I'm emerita faculty there now. So I taught thousands of students, undergraduate and graduate. And the first lesson I would tell them in every first day of class is assume nothing. Don't assume that you know the answer. Verify, you know, there's that corny story. If your mother says she loves you, check it out. I mean, we were never quite that ridiculous. But if a student turned in a story with a misspelling or an error of any kind, it was an F. So I feel like when I read, you know, outlets now and something I know is not correct or they don't have back it up with a stat or a link, it's like, well, that's an F.
That's an F.
Yeah. So it's ingrained in me to be accurate and truthful about not just what I produce, but in what I read and what I believe in.
Absolutely. So, you know, the flip side, what I mentioned before, is the reading. Do you find that as a journalist and as an author and at a time of COVID-19, are you also reading more?
Yes, I am reading a lot. And I'm reading different sites. You know, as a journalist, and you also, I'm sure you experience this, there are so many new, exciting sites and blogs and so much great content. You know, people talk about, you know, the media as if it's one big happy family. And we say, no, there's no morning meeting on Monday where everybody decides what to do. There are so many different kinds of sites and sources of information. It's really a vibrant and exciting time. So I'm finding that there are so many new sites and new voices out there that I am reading a lot and discovering, you know, through podcasts also and that kind of storytelling, like yourself, that there are so many points of view that are helpful and, you know, in living a life that is full and informed.
Yeah, it's richer perspective. And you
right.
have so many different sites and, you know, whether it's your traditional journalists, your bloggers, your podcasters. I also find myself ordering a lot of hardcover books. Like I just, as much as I love reading online, whoever said, you know, that books are going to go away clearly was not talking to me, because I have more books on my bookshelf. And it almost, whether it is a nonfiction book or a fiction book or a memoir, whatever, I love to have a book in my hands because it actually reminds me of going to the beach. And reading on the beach when I was younger, or I haven't been to the beach in a little while, but it's just such a nice feeling. So, and I'm also, I always tell students, so I used to teach as well, and they would say, well, how do you get yourself to a place of storytelling to be a better writer? I would always say, read a lot. And that helps your writing as well.
Absolutely. You know, I say when to people who, you know, like yourself, they ask me, well, how do you get to improve your writing? The first thing is to read. And then I say, imagine you wanted to be a tap dancer. You would go to several Broadway plays so you could see musicals where there's a lot of tap dancing. You wouldn't just say, oh, I want to be a tap dancer and then just get the shoes and go. And right. you wouldn't want to say, I want to be a storyteller and a writer and not read great writing. And I also agree with you about books in my hands because I'm on my laptop, you know, from 7:30 in the morning till 6 at night. And with working from home, you know, there's no commuting time. There's no real lunch breaks. There's no breaks away. So the last thing I want to do is enjoy a book on a Kindle. I want to actually hold it in my hand.
Right.
and turn the pages and flip around. Yeah.
Well, and mark the pages with those little note, those colored stickies if I want. Yeah, there's just something about, I guess because there is so much technology during the day. And yes, we are checking our phones at night. I'm sure you're doing that, especially if you're on a deadline and you're waiting for something. I do the same thing, whether it's a client or my publisher or whoever, a producer I'm working with. But yeah, it's nice just to turn it all off and read the words on a page, which is so refreshing. And speaking of refreshing, what do you do? What kind of keeps you refreshed and motivated and maybe focused so that you can be working from 6:30 until 6 at night?
I'm glad you asked that. I rediscovered my artistic creative side about 7 years ago. And I also write about this in the book. I started taking sketching and painting classes. So it's every weekend, and I've been doing it about 7 years, and I love it.
That's awesome.
Because I not only have built a community of other artistic souls, but I learned so much, and my instructors are just brilliant. And you learn how to see. You know, if you're spending 4 hours, and in the summers we paint outside, we do plein air oil painting.
Oh,
if you're spending hours and hours thinking, is that exactly the right blue? It's so calming because it is not rushed. It is not about my work or professional identity. Really, people don't even know who you are in the class, right? It's just about, did you get that shadow correctly? And how can I improve it? And then the instructor says, oh, you just put yellow there. It's like, oh, yellow, of course. So I just find that I look forward to that sometimes more than the work that I'm doing. It's like, it's almost Saturday. I can paint. So I have found that. And I'm considering going back to, I did amateur roller derby for 6 years.
No way.
Oh, it was so fun. And my derby name is Mish the Masher, because you have to have a derby
Masher.
Name.
Mish, so it's fun.
So it also opened up the possibility. I have all these women friends who are 20 to 30 years younger than me. So I write about that in the book as well, as about the value and the joy of having friends who don't have the life you have. You learn so much, and you get, you know, and they also say, don't wear that again. or maybe that's not just for you. Try this. So
that's a good friend.
Yeah, those are two things that I have found that are really enjoyable. And I stopped skating about 2 years ago, and now the rinks are open again. I stopped skating because the group I was with disbanded, and then the rinks closed because of COVID, and now they're open for safe distance skating. So I think,
oh my gosh. Back. Well, I would love to see a picture of that. You have to send that.
I'll send it to you.
Yeah. Send that my way. I also want to know what you said about not seeing. You know, when you're painting and when you're taking hours, you're seeing. Like you really are taking everything in an open landscape. That's amazing. Because when you're not doing that, and we're just rushing around all day, I know there's so much that we're missing, that we're just not truly seeing the beauty of what's around us. And every so often, I think everyone needs to stop and just take it in. Like the other day, I was out on my deck and I cleared my mind for a moment, and there were all these birds chirping and all these sounds. And I thought, I'm out here so much and I don't hear that. So I really think that doing something that makes you see is unbelievable. And I also like your roller derby. That's pretty good. So go you. Right.
So a parallel, you know, and you just said that, you know, the quiet and listening, a parallel to seeing is also listening, which also helps you as a writer. So I find that, you know, when you take the time to be quiet about that you can see and hear things differently. And it also helps in your descriptions, and it helps in your writing.
Oh, that's a great point. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that, Michelle. And I can't even believe we're up to the advice question where you get to share your advice with women worldwide. So all you listeners out there, Michelle, what would you say to somebody who really just wants to kind of find their, what you said, their life, their work, their meaning? How do they go about it? What are those first steps?
Well, the first reassurance I would offer is that dreams are meant for you to act upon them. So I would suggest investigating the process of how you fulfill your ambition. How can you get better at that? How can you intersect with what you intend and make it happen? So I would say trust your ambitions and trust that you are also worth that effort, because it is effort. And a caveat I would have is to share your dreams with only a select few. Because I have found that there are so many naysayers in the world, and it's easier for someone, I don't know why people do that, but it's easier for them to say, that'll never happen, or you can never do that. And then you feel shrunken, right? It's like going into Shark Tank, right? Like,
yes.
So I would protect your dreams and your ambition and share them with someone or several someones who will honor you and what you intend, and be supportive of that, and keep it to yourself. Because I've heard so many times, like the first book I wrote, someone, a former friend, said to me, "Who would read a book about your life?" And it's like, "Oh, we're done," right?
And that support,
right? Mm-hmm. And then also to try your dream on the side before you jump headfirst. And, you know, we're reminded every day in this pandemic, this global pandemic that is COVID related and also racial justice related, so much unrest in the world that we live in. We're reminded every day that life is short, and you deserve to live the life you intend, and you deserve to be fulfilled and to have, you know, a taste of your dream coming true, and you can make it happen.
Awesome advice. Trust your ambition. Absolutely. Michelle, thank you so much. Thanks for coming on the show, for sharing your journey, all of your wisdom. Really appreciate you and your time. So thank you.
Thank you. This was fun. Thank you.
Oh my gosh. I had so much fun chatting with you. And thank you to all of you out there, women worldwide listeners, or maybe you're watching us on YouTube. Thank you for being here. Thank you for sharing, for giving us your feedback, and for always letting us know how you are doing. We're here to help. And until the next time, friends, be safe, stay focused, energized, and feeling empowered. Thank you.